ಜಯಂ ವಿಶ್ವಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಶರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ್ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀಯದ್ವೈದ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಗುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ಬೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಗಂಗಾಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಾಂಶುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾನಂದ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧಿ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಂ ಉದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾತ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋಸ್ತವ ಜಾಯತೆ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಪಾಪ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖಶಮನ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಭರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಶ್ಚಾರ್ತೇಷ್ವ ವಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾತ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಗವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂದಿಯಲ್ ಸೂರಯ ತೇಜೋವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷಾ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಭುಹಗಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ವರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜಿತ ಕೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮಲ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾವತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂ ವಾ ಪರೈರೀಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯವರುದ್ಯದೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿಭಿಃ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭಿಃ ದರ್ಶನಾ ನಿಗಮಗಲ್ಪತರೋರ್ಗಳಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕಮುಖಾದಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ಪಿಬದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಗಾಃ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋಲ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿಹೇತವೇ ತಾವತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂತಮನುಪೇತಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈಪಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಗಾಧರಮಜ್ಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ತನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದೂತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನದೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರವೇಗಂ ಅದ್ಯಾಲ್ಮದೀಪಮದಿತಿತೀರ್ಷದಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಃ ಪುರಾಣಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನುಮುಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀನಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಜೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತದೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರ ಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತಿ ಕಳವೇಣು ಕುಣಿದಾದೃದಾನನೇಂದೋಃ ಮಮ ವಾಚಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭದಾ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರಿಂ ನ ಕಣಿಗಾಭಿ ಕಾಭಿ ಗಾಭಿ ನಮ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಲ್ ಗುರುಚರಣಾರವಿಂದಾಭ್ಯಾಂ ನಮ ವಂದೇ ನಂದವ್ರಜ ಸ್ತ್ರೀನಾಂ ಪಾದರೇಣುಮಭೀಷ್ಣಶ ಯಾಸಾಂ ಹರಿಗದೋದ್ಗೀತಂ ಪುನಾದಿ ಭುವನತ್ರಯಂ ಗೋಪೀಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಪರಮಾನವೀ ನಮ ಪೀತಾಂಬರಂ ಕರವಿರಾಜಿತ ಶಂಖಚಕ್ರಂ ಕೌಮೋದಗೀ ಸರಸಿಜಂ ಕರುಣಾಸಮುದ್ರಂ ರಾಧಾಸಹಾಯಮತಿಸುಂದರಮಂದಹಾಸಂ ವಾತಾಲಯೇಶ ಮನಿಶಂ ಹೃದಿ ಭಾವಯಾಮಿ ಕೋಮಳಂ ಕೂಜಯನ್ ವೇಣುಂ ಶ್ಯಾಮಳೋಯಂ ಕುಮಾರಗ ವೇದವೇದ್ಯವರಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಭಾಸದಾಂಬುರದೋ ಮಮ ಮೂಗಂ ಕರೋದಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಘಯದಿ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯಲ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದಮಾಧವಂ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ರಾಧಿಗಾಯೇ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಓಂ ಪಾರ್ಥಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿತಾಂ ಭಗವದಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರಥಿತಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ಮಧ್ಯೆ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣೀ ಭಗವತಿ ಅಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನೀ ಮಂಬತ್ವಾ ಮನಸಂಧದಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೇ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಿಣಿ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇವಿ ಆಸ ವಿಶಾಲ ಬುದ್ಧೇ ಹುಲ್ಲಾರವಿಂದಾಯತ ಪತ್ರ ನೇತ್ರ യനത്വയാ ഭാരത തൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകപാണയെ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃത ദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാജേദ്രതജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപ്പല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതി കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദി കൈവർത്തകേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാത്തഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുത ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതമംഗജക്കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന് ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയദേഗിരും യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതദ്ഗതയാമനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ യോന്ത പ്രവിഷമം വാചം ഇമാമൃസൂത്രം സഞ്ജീവയത്തിങ്കിലെ ശക്തിധര സുതാംനാം അന്യാം ശഹസ്തചരണശ്രവണാം തുകാദിൻ പ്രാണാൻ നമോ ഭഗവതി പുരുഷായ തുഭ്യം ഭൂതേർമഹദ്ബ്രയമാ പുരോ വിഭുർ നിർമാ ശേദേയതമൂഷു പുരുഷ ഭുങ്ക്തി ഗുണാൻ ഷോഡശ ഷോഡശാൽപകം സോലം കൃഷിഷ്ഠ ഭഗവാൻ മുജാംസിമേ ശ്രീരാജാരിസ്വാമിജി ബിഗിൻസ് ഭാഗവതം ഇൻ ദി ഫസ്റ്റ് കാൻഡോ ഹി മെൻഷൻസ് വിശ്വസർഗ വിസർഗാദി നവലക്ഷണ ലക്ഷിതം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണാഖ്യം പരം ധാമം ജഗദ്ധാമ നമാമിതൽ. ഫസ്റ്റ് ഓഫ് ഓൾ ശ്രീരാജാരിസ്വാമിജി ഓഫേഴ്സ് ഒബേസൻസസ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ. ഹി സേസ് സർഗം വിസർഗം സ്ഥാനം പോഷണം ഊധി മന്യന്തരം നീശാനുകഥാ നിരോധം മുക്തി ആശ്രയം. ദി ടെൻ ഫീച്ചേഴ്സ് ഓഫ് ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം ആൻഡ് ദീസ് ടെൻ ഫീച്ചേഴ്സ് റെഫേഴ്സ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ ആൻഡ് ആൾസോ ഈ സെഡ് ദാറ്റ് ഹൂ ഈസ് ദി ഫൗണ്ടേഷൻ ഓഫ് ദിസ് ക്രിയേഷൻ ആൻഡ് ഹൂ ഈസ് ദി അണ്ടർലൈങ് പ്രിൻസിപ്പിൾ ബിഹൈൻഡ് എവറിഥിങ് ആൻഡ് ഹൂസ് നെയിം ഈസ് കൃഷ്ണ. And that Tejas, I offer my obeisances to him, says Shiracharya. Sampradaya anusarena paurubarya anusarada Srimal Bhagavata Bhavartha Divyayam Pratanyade. He says, without creating any conflict, he says, Purvam Abaram, without creating any conflict between the two, all the great Acharyas who have given their commentaries on Srimal Bhagavatam, I am trying to present the bhavartham, the message of that, and this bhavartha deepika, that is the name of Sri Rajari's commentary, his name is bhavartha deepika, I am presenting that, he says. Kvaham mandamadi, kvedam mandhanam kshiravarithe, kim tatra paramanurvai, yatra majjadi mandaryam. First of all he says, I am so dull-headed, who am I to comment on Srimad Bhagavatam? Sridhara Swami says, then, where is this Srimad Bhagavatam which is considered to be like an ocean of milk, Kshira Samudram? So he says, Mandhanam Kshira Varithe. And where even the Mandara mountains, while churning the milk ocean, the Mandara mountain went down, isn't it? So when it is like that, in this Srimad Bhagavatam, a person like me, I'm just like a small worm, Paramanu, he says, Kim tatra paramanurvai yatra majjadi mandara. And there is chances that I could get completely lost in this. But still I am trying, he said. Mugam karodi vajalam pangam lenghayade girim yal kribatam aham mandi paramananda madhavam. But by Krishna's mercy, he says, even a dumb person can become very eloquent in speaking. Similarly, a lame person can even cross over a mountain. Mugam karodi pangam lenghayade girim. Right? And by whose mercy this can happen? So it can happen to me as well, he says. Krishna's mercy, I will try to do this. Basically saying that on his own he cannot write this commentary on Bhagavatam, but with Krishna's mercy everything is possible.
Tadhevam pradama adhyaya shal prashna munipikrada dvidiyed uttaram sudas chaturna mahateshwadha.
In the first chapter, what we find is that Sudha Goswami was questioned by the rishis with 6 questions they have raised, and in the second chapter they have answered 4 of them in the second chapter itself. So yesterday we were talking about that Srimad Bhagavatam, what Sridharajani Swami is saying there is that this Ishvara, Krishna, is something that has to be experienced inside. It has to be experienced inside. Krishna is nothing but experience inside our heart. Inside our heart. Right. So, and this absolute truth or Ishvara or Krishna, from Srimad Bhagavatam, You experience Krishna through hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, in that process. And with the process of hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam, bhakti develops in the heart. And eventually, one starts recognizing Krishna within the heart as his own very self, Atma Swarupam. And he can experience that inside. Sridhara Swami says, you can experience Krishna inside the heart as your very self. Very self. So, from his position, he's saying that this vastu called Krishna, vastu he calls it as. Vedyam vastava matra vastu shivadam. He calls it as vastu. Krishna is vastu. And this vastu, paramatma vastu, it is paramatma, is what you experience inside. Is what you experience inside. And it is not about any object as such. It's not about an object. What it is, he says, you experience inside this vastu called Satta Chitta Anandam. Sachida Anandam is what you experience inside. Yeah. So Sachida Anandam is nature of Ishvara or Krishna. And that Ishvara is what you experience through Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, Bhagavatam is a nectar, he says. And only that pure bhakti, Shuddha Prema Bhakti, about with relationship with Krishna, that is the topic of discussion in the Bhagavatam. And in that way, after knowing Krishna, later on, everything is understood as Krishna's manifestation, the whole creation, right? And that is what is known, that is the bhakti of Paramahamsas. Paramahamsas means self-realized souls. Their bhakti is realizing Krishna inside as their very self, and then experiencing that in all the other living entities, which is in line with what Navayogi said. You remember? Sarva? That's the same thing. Yeah. Sarva Bhuta? Sarva Bhuteshya Pashyat Bhagavad Bhav Almana. The same thing, what he's saying here. Then experiencing Krishna inside as Sachidanandam, and that Sachidanandam is experienced everywhere in whole creation, and that is what Srimad Bhagavatam's bhakti means. Bhakti in Srimad Bhagavatam is that experiencing Krishna within as our very self inside us as Andaryami, and that Andaryami is present in everyone as their soul. So this realization is what is considered in the Navayogi Samvadam also. Sarva Bhudeshya Pashyat Bhagavad Bhavam Almana. Buddha Ani Bhagavat Yasha Savai Bhagavad Ottama. So same thing. corroborating that here. So, and once you have realized that, that Antaryami inside is Krishna, and that same Antaryami is present in everyone as their very soul, then that relationship changes with the devotee. Devotee sees his only duty is to serve Krishna in every form, throughout the creation, whatever he finds, right? So those who are looking for liberation, they are called mumukshu. Mumukshu means one who is trying for moksha. So their sadhana bhakti and realized soul's prema bhakti, both of them are discussed in the Bhagavadam. Those who are looking for liberation, they are in the process what is called sadhana bhakti. Like all of us are in the sadhana bhakti stage. Those who are in the sadhana bhakti and those who are realized already and they have developed what is called prema bhakti. Both of them are discussed in the Bhagavadam. Similarly, mumukshus or we are all mumukshus. Mumukshus means we want moksham, liberation. They are called mumukshu. So the mumukshus perform sadhana and these sadhana, they are trying through that to get free from the cycle of birth and death. And similarly, the Paramahamsas are already realized Krishna. They have already realized Krishna. And these are all topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? That means sadhana bhakti and para bhakti both are discussed in the Bhagavatam. So, so Srimad Bhagavatam mainly, he says, talks about bhakti. Mainly talks about bhakti. But sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti, both of them is included in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, after realizing Krishna, the topic is all spoken about Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So, the topic of discussion in the Bhagavatam, three things comes. Bhakti, Bhagavan and Bhakta. Devotee, Krishna and devotion. These three topics you will find in Bhagavatam everywhere. Devotee, Krishna and devotion. Three topics, right? So, that is what it said that Srimal Bhagavate Mahamunikrite Kimva Parair Ishwara Sadhyo Hridhyavirudhyadetra Kritibhi Shushru Shubhi Talchanal. It says, right? It's an important statement in the sense, except Srimal Bhagavatam, there is no other literature which says, simply by hearing about Krishna, you get to realize the truth. This is the speciality of Bhagavatam. Simply by hearing about Krishna, you get to realize the truth inside. That's what he's saying here. Sadhyo hridhyavarudhyadetra kritibhi shushrushubhi talchanal. Talchanal, right? So this power, what Bhagavatam has, is not there in any other Puranams. No other Vedic literature has this capacity, right? That means, while hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, at the time, while hearing Bhagavatam itself, Bhagavatam has the capacity to illuminate one within the heart of experiencing Krishna. This power Srimad Bhagavatam has got. That's what Bhagavatam is saying. That at the time of hearing itself, while hearing Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam is capable of
giving us the experience of Krishna within the heart. And while being reading Srimad Bhagavatam or while listening to Bhagavatam, that bhakti can create Krishna's experience within the speaker as well as in the listener. And no other shastram has got this power. This has not been spoken about any other Vedic literature except Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is capable of doing such things, right? So how did that happen to Bhagavatam? This unusual power of able to illuminate Krishna's presence within our heart while speaking or while hearing. How did this happen, right? And that is why it's called Vacho Vibhuti. That means this Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound incarnation of Krishna. Vacho Vibhuti, Shabda Brahmam. Shabda Brahmam, it is called, is present as Srimad Bhagavatam. Shabda Brahmam is present as Srimad Bhagavatam. So, due to Krishna's presence in the Bhagavatam, like Krishna said, Tirodhaya Pravishtoham Srimad Bhagavadarnavam. Krishna said to Uddhava, when I leave this world, I will enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhava asked Krishna, if you disappear, what will happen to the world? Because when you are present here, they can see you. And from you, they can receive the knowledge and they will develop bhakti towards you. But once you leave this world, what will happen? So that's the time, this is in the Padma Purana. He told Uddhava, Uddhava, it is not like that. Even though I am leaving, I am still going to be present here in the form of Bhagavatam. Tirodhaya Pravishtoham, Srimal Bhagavadarnavam. I will enter into Bhagavatam. So, that means that simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it has got the power to create Krishna's presence in our heart, and that has got the capacity of Bhagavatam. That is special potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if it is like that, what to talk about? If Krishna can come within the heart, is that not this Bhagavatam that one should take very seriously? But you do require some kind of good fortune for that, and that is Krishna's mercy. Yeah. First of all, only one who has a special mercy from Krishna will have the desire to hear Bhagavatam. First of all, we have to get the desire to hear Bhagavatam, isn't it? So that desire itself is Krishna's mercy. If Krishna gives some mercy to us, then we will feel a desire to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And because sometimes there is no mercy and there is therefore no desire either. So, and that is why, and that's not anybody's fault. It's not anyone's fault. You see there, Nigama Kalpataror Galidam Phalam Shukamukhad Amurda Dravasam Yudam Pibada Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavugaha. Saying that Vedam is like a desire tree, Kalpavruksham. It's a desire tree. And desire tree means if you go and ask the tree anything, the tree will provide you with what you are asking for. That's called a Kalpavruksham, right? And this Kalpavruksham is present in the gardens in the heavenly planets called Nandanam Chaitraratham. In those gardens, this Kalpavruksham is present, right? So, Kalpavruksham is famous. You ask anything, the tree will provide that, right? So, and it is capable of fulfilling all our desires. Similarly, compared to that Kalpavruksham, Vedam is compared with that Kalpavruksham. Why? Vedam, if it is properly followed, Vedam, injunctions and the Vedic injunctions or Vedic knowledge, if it is taken seriously, it's like a Kalpavruksham, it says. Why? It's capable of providing us this four Purusharthams, Dharmam, Artham, Kamam, Moksham. They are called Purusharthams. These four Purusharthams, which is in English you say religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation, the four things. It's capable of providing that. Providing in the sense, Vedam will show us the path towards achieving these four. Achieving these four. Dharmam, Artham, Kamam, Moksham. Right? So, these four Purusharthams is provided by Vedam, just like the Kalpavruksham. So therefore, Vedam is compared to a Kalpavruksham, right? So, that Vedam is considered compared to a tree. That's what it is spoken in that verse. That Vedam is compared to a tree, and from that tree, a lots of fruits are coming out, and one fruit of that is, which is fully ripe and ready to be eaten, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the fruits from the Vedam which is fully ripened and ready for eating. Why is it said that it is the essence of this Vedic knowledge? Saram is that that this way Bhagavatam we got it through Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, is it not? It is through Sri Shuka Brahmarshi we got Bhagavatam. And if Sri Shuka Brahmarshi got attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, then that means it has to be a fully ripened fruit of Vedam. Otherwise it would not have been attractive for him. Because it came through Srimad Bhagavatam, came through Sri Shuka Brahmarshi to this world. That is why it is called, it's a fully ripened fruit of the Vedam. It is because of that. Because it came through him. Why? Because he knows, he is so highly advanced spiritually and realized, unless there is something special about this fruit, it won't be attractive to him. Ordinary fruits are not attractive to him. Means he has even Vedic knowledge he has absorbed to such an extent that only if it is the cream of Vedic knowledge, it will be attractive to Shuka Brahmarshi. Otherwise not. So that is why they are saying that this Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedic knowledge. It is because of this. Because Sri Shuka Brahmarshi was attracted by this, everybody understands that this must be the essence of all the Vedic knowledge. Otherwise he would not have been attracted to that. This is how they have concluded. So, therefore, Amrutadravasam Yudam, it says, isn't it? Amrutadravasam Yudam means that what is present in this fruit is the complete essence of the Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge means what? Satta, Chitta, Anandam, Brahmam. Sachidananda Brahmam is the what is present throughout in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sachidananda Brahmam is present throughout in the Bhagavatam. In other words, Krishna's Vacho Vibhuti. Krishna is presented here through words. Through verbally it is being given to us. And therefore, Sachidanandam is a Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from Sachidanandam. Suppose if you consider Srimad Bhagavatam as a fruit, right? A fruit normally has a seed inside and then it has got the skin outside. We remove the skin, we remove the seed and we eat the pulp, is it not? But here in this Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no skin and there is no seed. You can completely enjoy it. That means it is so relishable, nectarian it is, then only the pulp is present. And that too, what they say, Kani Buddha Sachidanandam. Kani Buddha means that Sachidananda Brahmam is present everything, everywhere. And that Brahmam in the form of a solid substance is present in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like something that has become solidified form. So, Sachidanandam is beyond description, beyond our words and beyond our intelligence. We can't understand Sachidanandam, what that means, isn't it? It will come later on, everything will be discussed later. what is Sachidananda means, right? So, to understand now that Sachidanandam is beyond our understanding, what Sachidanandam is, right? So, the Sachidanandam is difficult for ordinary people to perceive it and experience it. And that is only possible for personalities like Sri Shukha Brahmarshi, who can relish it. So, pure Sachidanandam, which is pure Sachidananda Brahmam, in order that people can relish it, it became in the solid form. That is called Ghanibhuta Sachidanandam, which has become solid, and that has become Srimad Bhagavatam, and taken this form of sound vibration, in the sound form, right? So, because it has come to in this form, Sachidanandam has come in this form of sound vibrations, we are in a position now to read, to sing, to glorify, and to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And so, pure Sachidanandam has come into this form of solid form of Sachidanandam. So, therefore, everybody can relish it, right? So, and that is why he says here, Amrita Drava Samyutam. Sachidanandam also means Chidanandam, Chitta Anandam. That has become solid form, that Chidanandam. And therefore, everyone can relish it, right? So, in this way, this fruit of that Kalpavraksham is Srimad Bhagavatam. It is fully ripe and it has only got the pulp. It doesn't have the skin, it doesn't have the seed inside. So, in that way, that Srimad Bhagavatam, through Sri Shukha Brahmarshi and through his disciples and grand disciples, in that way, without getting destroyed anywhere, it came to into our hands as well, right? So, if a fruit falls from the tree onto the ground, then the fruit will get damaged. You know, when the fruit, mango for example, if a mango, fully ripened mango, if it falls onto the ground, then because of hitting the hard ground, it will spoil a part of that mango, right? But that hasn't happened to this Bhagavatam. It didn't, when the fruit fell from the Kalpavraksham tree, it didn't fall onto the ground. Before it touched the ground, Sri Shukha Brahmarshi caught that. And he, through his disciples and grand disciples and great grand disciples, it was disseminated throughout this world. So, that is our good fortune. So, what do we have to do? We have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, glorify Bhagavatam, hear and sing. That's all what is required, it says. So, and it is for that purpose this human life has been given to us. And that Srimad Bhagavatam, the opportunity given to us in this human life, should not be wasted for enjoying sense gratification. It shouldn't be done. In this way, Vedavyasa Maharshi begins Bhagavatam, right? So, he says, this Bhagavatam, this fruit, has come to your hands, and instead of relishing this fruit, do not waste your time in enjoying the silly sense objects. And he says, Pibada Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Muhu Aho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavugaha. He says that Alayam Pibada, Rasam Pibada, keep on drinking this Bhagavatam as much as possible. Drink Srimad Bhagavatam as much as possible, because even in the liberated state, this Bhagavatam will found very relishing. It is so tasty, Srimad Bhagavatam, it says. ബിക്കോസ് ഭാഗവതം ഈസ് കൃഷ്ണ. ശ്രീമത് ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി. ഭാഗവതം ഈസ് നോട്ട് ഡിഫറെന്റ് ഫ്രം കൃഷ്ണ. ഹി സേസ് ദെയർഫോർ ഈവൻ ഇൻ ദ ലിബറേറ്റഡ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ്സ്, ഈവൻ ഇൻ ദി ലിബറേറ്റഡ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ് പീപ്പിൾ റിലീഷ് ശ്രീമത് ഭാഗവതം, പീപ്പിൾ റിലീഷ് ശ്രീമത് ഭാഗവതം. സോ ദെർ ഈസ് നത്തിങ് എൽസ് ടു ബി ഡൺ എക്സെപ്റ്റ് reading Srimad Bhagavatam, singing Bhagavatam and hearing Bhagavatam, and when devotees talk about that, hear from them, and gradually over a period of time you will start a relationship with Bhagavatam, you will connect with Srimad Bhagavatam, and in that way finally make the message in the Bhagavatam, makes it as your own. Swamshikaranam it's called. Swamshikaranam means what is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that knowledge and bhakti comes to into within ourselves, develop that within our own heart. So there is nothing else to be done. So from that bhakti renunciation will come. You don't have to try for renunciation. When bhakti develops in the heart, two things will follow from that. One is virakti and other one is the jnanam. Bhakti, once bhakti comes in, automatically virakti and jnanam, that means renunciation and knowledge, will come to that person. Nothing else is required. That is why it was said here, ആലയം പിബത. ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം ഇസ് സേയിങ് ആലയം പിബത, പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസം ആലയം, ആലയം പിബത, റൈറ്റ്? സോ ദിസ് ഈസ് ദി സാധന. ആക്ച്വലി ഭാഗവത സാധന ഇസ് ദിസ്, ദാറ്റ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് വൺ ഓഫ് ദ ടോപ് മോസ്റ്റ് സ്പിരിച്വൽ സാധന, ദ ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം. ഹിയറിംഗ് ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം ആൻഡ് റിഫ്ലക്ടിംഗ് ഭാഗവതം, റിഫ്ലക്ടിംഗ് ഓൺ what you hear from Bhagavatam, that is required, that is a sadhana. Sadhana is reflection of what we hear from the Bhagavatam, and then making it as your own, that means you realize it within yourself, right? So and bhakti will develop in the heart, and when bhakti develops, virakti will come, which is detachment, and renunciation will come. And in bhakti and virakti, in its complete form, the realization of Sachidananda Brahman will happen inside. When bhakti, virakti, in its perfection, the experience of Sachidananda will happen inside. And that is jnanam. That is jnanam, right? So, and that will continue even after liberation. Even the Jivan Mukta state, this will continue, right? So, he says that there also, even if you are liberated, even then it won't stop. It will continue from there. So, in this way, this unusual glorification of Bhagavatam, which is quite unusual, it's not spoken like this about any other Vedic literature, like the way it is spoken about Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this unusual glorification of Bhagavatam is the first thing spoken here. And in that way, Vedavyasa Maharshi is drawing our attention into Bhagavatam. Into Bhagavatam. Then he begins Bhagavatam. He says, in Naimisharanyam, that's a place where this Samvadam is happening, this discussion is happening in Naimisharanyam, between Suda Goswami and the many, many rishis who are present there in Naimisharanyam. And what is speciality with this Naimisharanyam? Naimisharanyam, where Vishnu is present there permanently, in the sense that Shaunakadi rishis, they were performing a satram there for a very long period of time. normally, a satram is referred to if it lasts 12 days or more. Minimum 12 days it has to be there. And if it is more than 12 days, it's considered as a satram. And satram is like a yagam, where yagam means like a yajnam or a sacrifice, you call that. Yeah. So here it says it lasted 1,000 years. This satram lasted thousand years, right? And this has happened in Naimisharanyam. How did this name come, Naimisharanyam? There are two stories associated with that, with Naimisharanyam. When before the Kali Yuga began, this Kali age started, the rishis went to Lord Brahma and told him that Kali is coming. And Kali time, they were frightened of Kali because they knew with the arrival of Kali, all the good qualities will be gone from the people. People will become more like animals, practically, the consciousness-wise. They'll become like animals. Knowing this, that they asked Lord Brahma, tell us a place where we can practice our sadhana, where we can execute our spiritual life, and where should we go? They asked Lord Brahma. Brahma created through his Sankalpa Shakti, he created this in his mind, a wheel, and told him that I am rolling this wheel, you follow that wheel, and wherever it goes and gets broken, that's the right place for that. And in that way, that wheel was thrown, and that place will not be affected by Kali, he said. And the rishis went after that wheel, and finally when it arrived, this Naimisharanyam, at that place, this wheel got broken. Nemi means this circumference of that wheel, that got broken, and in that way the name came as Naimisharanyam. And that is why this name Naimisharanyam had come. This is one reason why it's called a Naimisharanyam. Also, Naimisharanyam is a place where Mahavishnu has killed one demon in one nimisham, 1 second, he killed him. And therefore also, this got a name as Naimisharanyam. So, for two different reasons, right? So then the question comes, 1,000 years, this sacrifice was going on in Naimisharanyam. 1,000 years, right? So, people will ask this question, that do we have 1,000 years lifespan? That question will come up, isn't it? So, the answer to that is, that Shastram says, Shatayu Purusha, 100 years is normally considered to be our lifespan. So, but, Shastram also says, through the power of yoga, yoga prabhavam, yoga prabhavad, he says, you can extend the lifespan up to 1,000 years. Our lifespan, normally it is 100 years. But it can be extended to 1,000 years through the power of yoga. This is one explanation for that 1,000 year sacrifice. Because people always ask this question, how is it possible that you could have a sacrifice for 1,000 years? Because our life is only normally 100 years, isn't it? So the answer to that, one answer is that the lifespan can be expanded through the power of yoga. That is one option. The second option is that because this has happened 5,000 years ago, and today we have to explain all these things to people. And they are saying that normally in a year we have got 6 seasons, isn't it? 6 seasons we have. Winter, summer, autumn, spring, like that. There are 6 seasons, right? And every day has got 60, what they call it as nariga. One day has got 69, 24 hours. That means 1 hour is 2.5 nariga. And so 24 hours is 60 narigas, right? And in there they say every 10 nariga is considered to be 1 season. If you take like that, 1 samvatsaram means that in one day it is considered to be, one day is considered to be 1 samvatsaram. And therefore, this yagam which was happening, which has lasted 1,000 days, means 1,000 samvatsaram. And this is spoken in the Vedam as well. This way. It is spoken in the Vedam. So it's one of these two, you can accept it, whichever may fit in your with your mind.
The explanations given is in these two different ways. One, to know that extending the lifespan up to 1,000 years, this has happened with the rishis there. Or alternatively, in the Vedam says here that the one day, if you divide into 10 different seasons, that's how in the Vedam it says, right? And 10 nariga refers to one season. So 6 seasons comes in one day itself. And that is why it's called Samvatsaram. And this one lasted 1,000 Samvatsaram, it says there, or 1,000 days. That's also in line with the Vedic calculations, in line with the Vedic calculations, right? So, these are all from the great scholars' references like that. So, Ugrashravasa, this great speaker, Sudha Goswami, he arrives there and he is a disciple of Sri Shuka Brahmarshi. And he also had the good fortune of hearing Bhagavadam with Parikshit Maharaj in Ganga River bank in Shukratal. When Parikshit heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, it so happened that this Sudha Goswami also happened to be there at that time. Right. So therefore, he is considered to be a very fortunate person, isn't he? Naturally. When Parikshit was hearing Bhagavatam, not many people had the good fortune. Of course, there were other rishis and all were there. But compared to that, Sudha Goswami or Ugrashravasa had this good fortune to be there with them. To be there with them. And what else is there? That when they asked Shuka Brahmarshi while leaving, when can we hear Bhagavatam again? Shuka Brahmarshi told them, then look at that person there, Sutta Ugrashravasa. He will be speaking Srimad Bhagavatam in Naimisharanyam. Those who want to hear Bhagavatam can go there, he said. So, if Shuka Brahmarshi has said that about Sudha Goswami like that, means that he has authorized him. It's a kind of recognition, isn't it? He's saying that this Sudha or Ugrashravasa, he will speak Bhagavatam later in Naimisharanyam. Those who want to hear Bhagavatam again can go and listen to him. And that's how Shuka Brahmarshi left the scene and gone away, right? So, from that incident, practically Sudha Goswami has received an authorization from Sukadev Goswami. Authorization, right? So he walks in here to this arena where this sacrifice is going on, and all the rishis there, they got up and received him nicely, right? And then they asked various questions to him. The main question they have asked was, what do we have to do to get peace of mind? How do we get the peace inside in this age of Kali? In Kali, you will notice everybody is disturbed in the mind, one thing or the other. Always disturbed. That's the very nature of Kali. Totally opposite to Satyayugam. Satyayugam, everyone was peaceful. Nobody was disturbed. But in Kali, everyone's mind is disturbed. That is the main problem, right? So, they're asking this question that what is the ultimate thing we have to do for our ultimate benefit so that we get this peace inside. We get some shanti inside. It is also difficult in one life to study all the shastram and be able to absorb everything. Kali's special problem that is. To study all the shastram, to absorb everything, is difficult. Because most of our time is spent to get this body going. Isn't it? It's strange when you think about it. this body, to keep this body going, almost 80-90% of our time is spent on that. And therefore, it is impossible for ordinary people that they can read all the shastram and absorb everything and make it practical to get liberated. To get liberated. And moksha margam, the process of getting liberated. Is there any process, they said to him, is there any process which will help these poor people in the Kali Yuga, to help them to get liberated from here, from this situation, right? And what is the possibility of getting some peace of mind? And then they asked, was there any specific purpose for which Krishna had come to this world? And all, if it was something specific, what was that? They wanted to know. Then normally all incarnations, Krishna comes here for different incarnations, it has got a purpose behind it. Basically that purpose is to maintain peace in this world, loka sangraham. And was there something more than that? Krishna's coming here normally to maintain peace in this world and to keep things in order. Krishna comes, like he says in the Bhagavad Gita also. But was there anything more to it than that, what Krishna's coming here? And they wanted to hear in detail about Krishna's appearance. And similarly, Krishna's appearance means, it's not only this particular Krishna's form, it refers to all other incarnations as well, previously what Krishna had taken. That's all Krishna's appearance in different forms. Avatara katha. And all pastimes related to creation, maintenance and dissolution. They wanted to hear all of that. And then they said to him, they told him, by our good fortune, a personality like yourself has come here today. Because the rishis knew that Suta Goswami was present there, hearing Bhagavatam from Shuka Brahmarshi. So, then they asked this question, what is in the Bhagavatam also there? Swam kashtam adhino vede dharmakam sharanam gada. That when Krishna left this world, what happened to dharmam? Dharmam is dependent on Krishna. Now if Krishna has gone, what has happened to dharmam? Right? And it is with these six questions Srimad Bhagavatam begins. And Sri Shiva Brahmarsha, Satyasuddha Goswami, is answering the questions. How? First of all, he offers obeisances to his spiritual teacher, Shuka Brahmarshi. That's how he begins. Yam pravrajandam anupetam apetakrityam dvaipayano virahakadaram ajuhava putredidan maidayattaravo bhinedu tam sarvabodha hridayam munimanatosmi yaswa nubhavam akhila shudhi. Those two verses is their prayers to the spiritual master. Prayers to the spiritual master by Suda Goswami. Those two verses. Yaswanubhavam akhila shudhi saramegam adhyatmadivam adititirshadam tamondham samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam tam vyasasunam upayami gurum muninam. So, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi says here, in those two verses, in messages, that he was never given any purificatory processes. Who? Shuka Brahmarshi. Shuka, normally, when a child is born, he has to have so many purificatory ceremonies. For the Brahmanas, there is about 40 of them altogether. Minimum 16. When it is completely done, there are books available, you can read them. The 40 different purificatory ceremonies necessary for a Brahmana. 40 of them. But minimum there are 16. Those 16, none of them was done for Shuka Brahmarshi. That means he never had any purificatory processes, right? The reason for that is all these purificatory processes makes a person to follow the process of Krishna consciousness or bhakti to develop. But here is a personality who had come from the mother, already liberated. So a liberated soul doesn't require any purification, does it? He's already liberated. Jivan Mukta he is. So Jivan Mukta person is not eligible for any karma. This is the first thing to understand. Jivan Mukta means one who is already liberated. A liberated person is not qualified to perform any karma. Karma is for impure people. People who are not pure, they require all the purificatory ceremonies. A liberated soul is already liberated. He is not qualified for any karma. Jivan Mukta and karma doesn't go together. Karma and jnanam are opposing forces. Karma is against jnanam. You have to remember that. It will come later. We will discuss that. So, karma and jnanam are opposing forces. So, therefore, Jivan Muktas never engage in karma. Karma is deadly against their liberated state of consciousness. So, therefore, a Shodasha Samskaram, the minimum purificatory process, didn't happen for Sukadeva Goswami. That's the reason for that. That because Jivan Mukta state is such that he is not, karmadhigaram is not there for him. He is not allowed to perform any karma. He doesn't need it and he is not allowed either. Right? So, because he has come as Jivan Mukta, he doesn't have to achieve anything through karma. He doesn't have to achieve anything through karma. So, therefore, as soon as he came out, he walked away from home and he had no direction in which he was going, right? He left the Vedavyasa Maharshi's ashram and he walked out, and that is what he says, Parivrajaga. Parivrajana means that. That you walk away without any direction, which you don't have any definite direction. You are walking away from home, that's all. Which way you are going, you don't even have any definite plan, right? So, at least at that time, it says here, Virahaka Dharama Juhava. Vedavyasa Maharshi followed him. And he was calling him Putra Putra, telling him to come back, right? And he was asking him to come back home. And at that time, when he, Shuka Shuka in Vedavyasa Maharshi asked him to come back, but then the reply came from all the trees who were standing there. All the trees were asking what? They were asking him, what is that? Why are you calling me? He said, right? Actually, what happened was, Sukadeva Goswami answered being present in the trees. Being present in the trees. All this may sound very unusual for us, isn't it? That Sukadeva Goswami is answering through the trees. Trees are answering. This is what I am saying. This Sachidanandam realization, when we are talking about that, realizing that there is only one Chaitanyam here. Shuka Brahmarshi was showing to Vedavyas that I am that Chaitanyam. I am already in that stage. That I can talk to you through any form here. Any Namarupam, I can answer you. So, to make Shuka Brahmarshi, Vedavyasa Maharshi realize that he answered that, all the trees are answering. All the trees are answering. And they answered. And the sound was very similar to Sukadeva Goswami's sound. That came from the trees, right? Why is that? That's what it mentioned there. Sarvabhuta hridayam munimanatosmi. Sarvabhuta hridayam. He is present in everywhere. Who? That is that realization. Right? When you become Sachidananda Brahmam, you are present in everything. Of course, we can't even understand that, can we? I mean, we can only talk about it, but to understand what his state was, one, he is present in everyone. One who is present in everyone. Like Krishna, we talk about Antaryami in the same way. That realization he has, right? So,
And this is confirmed in the Upanishads as Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. If you have realized a Brahmam, you become Brahmam. That's what that means. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. Right? So, that does not mean that he was not Brahmam before. Right? He was Brahmam before, but that realization of Brahmam has gone away due to avidya inside. And he has forgotten that, but then through Brahmam realization, he has come back to his original state as he is Brahmam. Realization has come back. So he has become Brahmam, Brahma Tattvam, and this Rish, that is why he is called Shuga Brahmam. Sometimes they call it like that. Sometimes we call Sukadeva Goswami, like that we say. Some people say Sri Shuga Brahmarshi, and many people call Sri Shuga Brahmam, Shuga Brahmam, they call it. Because he is Brahmam himself. Brahmam itself, right? So, Brahmam means who is present everywhere. Inside, outside, and everything in this whole, whatever you can imagine, it's all inside Brahmam. Whole creation. That's Brahmam. Brahmam means there's nothing outside Brahmam. If you can if you can bring everything, the whole creation and everything inside, that's Brahmam. All planetary systems, all the universes, it's all within this Brahmam. Brahmam only exists. That's the Brahmam means Brihat. Brihat means so big that it has no limitations. Right. So that Shuga Brahmarshi who has become Brahmam, through him that he knows that he is become Brahmam and he is present in all the trees as well. All living entities, whether it's plants, trees, creepers, even microbes and even the elephants and all animals everywhere, he is present in them. And what that means is he's not a personality anymore. For us, personality is only when there is ego. Vyaktitvam, individuality, is when there is ego inside. Once the ego has left us completely, we are not anymore personality. There is no personality after that. Personality goes away. Right? So, therefore, Shuga Brahmarshi, who has become this Brahmam, and through his unusual, obviously, through that unusual power of knowledge or realization, he didn't have to speak. He was able to make the trees to speak on his behalf. He made the trees to, made them to speak, and they can do that. They can do that. So naturally, he gave the answer to Vedavyas when Vedavyas called him. The answer was given by the, Shuga Brahmarshi gave the answer to Vedavyas through the trees, right? So, already he has become Brahmam himself, Shuga Brahmarshi, and which means that a Brahmam which is present in the trees as well, as their Andaryami, he can hear Vedavyasa Maharshi's call, him, he was able to hear that through the trees. And he could reply them through the trees. He could hear the call through the trees, right? Because Andaryami is one. In Vedavyas, in the trees, and in the Shuga Brahmarshi. It's all one. So that one Andaryami can relay the call from Vedavyas through the trees to him, and similarly he can reply Vedavyas through the trees. Whatever it may be, ultimately the trees answered the question, and by answering that, the intention was Shuga Brahmarshi wanted Vedavyasa Maharshi to understand Shuga Brahmarshi's position. Vedavyasa Maharshi did not understand what stage of realization he is. What stage of realization he is. It is difficult because Vedavyasa Maharshi, to have a son, he had to wait a long time. He goes to Himalayas and performs a lot of sadhana, upasana there to please Lord Shiva. And it is with Lord Shiva's mercy that Lord Shiva told Vedavyas, you will have a son who has got all the power of all the five material elements. Earth, water, air, ether and fire. The five material elements' strength will be there in that person. Spiritual strength. So, therefore, this Shuga Brahmarshi's potency, Vedavyasa Maharshi could not understand first. So, in order to make him understand, this particular experience helped. When he answered through the trees to Vedavyas, Vedavyas understood that my son is not an ordinary person. My son is not an ordinary person. So, only for that purpose, Shuga Brahmarshi answered this through the trees. This was the reason behind that. Right? So, and that purpose was achieved by that, and he made Shuga Brahmarshi, Vedavyas realize, I am present in you, in Vedavyas, and I am present in the whole creation. Who says? Shuga Brahmarshi. I am present in yourself, and I am present in the whole creation, right? And I am not going anywhere, leaving you, because I am present there. I am present everywhere. This you will see often in the Bhagavatam. Krishna sent Uddhava to gopis to convey the same message. Krishna cannot leave anyone. Krishna is present everywhere. So where is the question of leaving? Gopis felt that Krishna is leaving. Krishna says, I haven't left. The same way here. Shuka Brahmarshi is saying to Vedavyas, there is no question of me leaving, because the state of consciousness of Shuka Brahmarshi is very much similar to what Krishna's consciousness is. Present everywhere. Tam sarva bhuta hridayam munim anatosmi. So, that I am that pure consciousness present everywhere, and if you are feeling that I am leaving you, that's your illusion. It's Brahmam. Confusion in your mind. Actually, I don't leave anywhere. So I am present in everything. And in that way, he made Vedavyas realize the actual spiritual position of Sukadeva Goswami to him. And then, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi convinced Vedavyas in this way. Then he said, Sarva Bodha Hridayam. And then he offers obeisances to Sri Shuka Brahmarshi by Suda Goswami. Even though we all have the same power, according to Shastra, we all have the same power like Sukadeva Goswami has got. But due to that avidya or maya that has taken over in our mind and consciousness, right? That is ajnanam. That due to that ajnanam or darkness, and not knowing how to get out of this situation, our present situation. And Shuga Brahmarshi felt compassion for them. For the jiva, who are trapped in the material cage or material body. And for their, due to his feeling for them, what has he done? Samsarinam karuna yaha purana guhyam tam vyasa sunyam. He felt compassion for them, and he gave to this world, for feeling compassion for these jivas who are trapped in the material body, for them to escape, he gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. Jnana Deepam. That's what it says here. Then Adhyatma Deepam. Adhyatma Deepam means the light of knowledge or spiritual knowledge. The light of spiritual knowledge. The light of spiritual knowledge was given to us by Shuga Brahmarshi for the jivas who are trapped in their material bodies, finding difficult to escape from this, from the cycle of birth and death, right? So that's why Srimad Bhagavatam is addressed here as Adhyatma Deepam. Adhyatma Deepam, that's a word the Suta Goswami uses Bhagavatam and uses this special word Adhyatma Deepam.
Aditi Dirshayam Tamantham. Tidirshadam Tamantham.
And with the help of this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is knowledge, Jnana Deepam, that one can transcend this darkness that is caught us everywhere and escape from this cycle of birth and death, right? And that means through self-realization of the soul that yes, Shishuka Brahmarshi has presented Srimad Bhagavatam to this world and Suda Goswami offers Tam Vyasa Sunim Upayami Guru Munina. I offer my obeisances to him. Then after that, what he did was, first of all, he offered his obeisances to his guru, who? Suda Goswami, which is Shiva Brahmarshi. And then he offers obeisances to Naranarayana Krishi. And that is what he, Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswati Vyasam. Three people. Naranarayana Krishi, Vedavyasa Maharshi and Saraswati Devi. All three of them. He offers obeisances to them. He says there that to tell people that you, before you begin Srimad Bhagavatam, these three personalities, spiritual master, Vedavyasa Maharshi, Naranarayana Krishi and Saraswati Devi, all of them should be offered respects to them. And Ugrashravasa, that is Suda Goswami here. He is saying here that Naranarayana Krishi, Naranarayana is the embodiment of Dharma. Embodiment of Dharma. Paramatma Swarupam, right? And Saraswati is Vagdevada. Ability to speak the truth without any fault. And then Vedavyasa Maharshi is his own father who gave him Bhagavatam. Ugrashravasa, right? And Bhagavatam has also been given the name Jayam. What that means is, with Srimad Bhagavatam in hand, one can fight Maya and win. With the help of Bhagavatam, one can fight Maya and win. That's why it's called Jayam, right? So, then he says, Munaya Sadhu Prashtoham Bhavadbhur Logamangalam Yelkada Krishna Samprasno Yen Alma Suprasidadi, right? He said, Suda Goswami says to the rishis present there that your question is very interesting, he said, because it's beneficial for everybody, these questions what you have raised. First thing you asked about Krishna, right? And it is only by discussing Krishna you get peace inside. The mind will become peaceful when you properly start discussing Krishna, right? So Krishna's pastimes, Krishna Leela, Sri Krishna Leela, has got this capacity to pacify our mind, right? And therefore it is essential for everyone. And all your other questions are important. And he said that, what is peace of mind? That's the next stage, right? So, normally we say, people when they get very disturbed in the mind, they say, I wish you had some peace in my mind, or peace in life, we say like that, right? So, that is true, that peace of mind is sometimes what we want, if we don't want too much emotional or thoughts inside disturbing our mind, right? But how we will get that we don't think about it, how to get it. We want it, but we don't never think how to have it, isn't it? The funny thing about that is that that we want it and then we will run after things which creates it.
This is the problem with this. We want peace of mind by saying at the same time we will run after things outside which is actually causing this problem inside. The external world, wherever, whatever we are running after in the world, is the one which is causing this problem, because the mind is running after them. And because of that, and that's what we are doing. That's what we are doing, right? So basically you can see the external things are the one that's creating the problems inside, right? And we are unable to understand those things I'm running after. They have no existence. They are not real. They will stay for some time and then they will disappear and get lost. And we also know that, but we won't stop running after them. Even though we know that the things what we are running after is not permanent, they are all temporary, whatever it may be. But even though we know that, and we get disturbed inside, and we won't stop running after them, still we will chase them. We will chase them. So, that is what he is saying here. We don't realize that these things I am running after, right? And if my mind get absorbed in that, when they get destroyed, I will suffer from that. Because I ran all my life after them. And somehow I got it. And now it's all getting destroyed. And then I will feel very bad, isn't it? I wasted my time, I wasted all my energy for that. Right? So, basically this understanding that all sense objects which is in the world, everything, is ultimately only will bring us distress. That realization is not coming to us. In spite of the fact that repeatedly we are hearing, somehow or the other, our nature is like that. We want shanti inside, but then we will run after things which creates disturbance inside. And we won't give it up. So this is the confusion. This is the confusion. Everybody is in this state of confusion, right? So, and first thing is to understand that these things outside cannot give us happiness. Any amount of saying this is not going to change. It's not going to change. And that is why now and then Vedavyasa Maharshi and also Shukha Brahmarshi will say certain things to us through examples to teach us. They are saying there that when your mind is not in touch with the world, when it does not go outside, when it is not in touch with the world, when does that happen? Only in the deep sleep, isn't it? It is in the deep sleep you are not in touch with the world outside. All other states you are in touch with the world, waking state and the dream state. But in the deep sleep, you are not in touch with the world. And in that deep sleep, you don't say, I want peace of mind, do you? In the deep sleep, you have so much peace of mind that you don't have to ask for it. You are getting it without anything, right? So, it is in that state, it's the only state out of the three where you actually experience peace of mind. Shanti. Only in the deep sleep state. And at that moment, what has happened is that your mind has gone back to its source where it came from. The Antaryami. It's gone and dissolved there. It's gone and dissolved there. There is difference here. In daily life, it goes and dissolves. In the self-realized state, it becomes the Antaryami. That's the difference. When self-realization happens, the mind becomes the Antaryami. There is no more mind after that. Mind has become Antaryami. Whereas in a daily life, only in the deep sleep state, it goes and dissolves. But in the morning, it comes back again. So, what it is saying here is that if your mind goes back to Antaryami, and if it never comes back again, then whatever happens in this world outside won't disturb you. Till then this world will be a botheration all the time for everybody. Till the mind goes and dissolves in the Antaryami inside, this world will give us trouble. And the proof that mind is suffering because of its connection with the world is to show that when it goes and dissolves in the deep sleep state in Antaryami, you are not experiencing this world anymore. And with that there is no disturbance either. This is the way to understand this. So you can see in the beginning itself, they are telling us this deep sleep state, how important it is to understand properly, right? So then, that state, what you experience in the deep sleep, in order to get there, what do we have to do? That's what he's saying here. Savai pumsam paryo dharmam yado bhakti rathokshaje ahaituki apradihada yena alma samprasidadi. That's the answer. Savai pumsam paryo dharmam yado bhakti rathokshaje ahaituki apradihada yena alma samprasidadi. That through bhakti, you have to reach that state of what you experience in the deep sleep, right? So, what kind of bhakti? He's saying, ahaituki apratihatam. That is the nature of that bhakti. It has to be ahaituki, it has to be apratihatam. That means, you are not executing bhakti for any purpose. You want something. Like normally bhakti in this world is really connected with something to get from Krishna or some help in some form. Not that kind of bhakti. Here, to get Krishna itself, to get Krishna, you are serving him. To get Krishna inside, you are serving him, right? And that is what is called ahaituki bhakti. Ahaituki bhakti, right? So, and that has to be continuous. Apratihatam. That bhakti which has developed continuously, not forgetting Krishna, 24 hours, without interruptions, right? That kind of upasana. That kind of upasana. Ahaituki apratihata bhakti. When that happens, the mind will go and completely finish itself in the Antaryami. It will go and dissolve in the Antaryami. Antaryami is Sachidanandam. It was disappeared once for all, the mind. And then it won't go anymore into the world outside. World means sense objects. It won't go into sense objects anymore. And that time you experience what is called shanti or anandam or what we call as the peace of mind. That's the time when you will experience that. So for that purpose, you have to take the shelter of Krishna's leela, Krishna leela, right? So that bhakti can develop by hearing about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, right? So, continuously hearing about Krishna's, which includes katha, stuti, upadesham, everything, right? In this way, leela, katha, shravana, kirtanam, and mananam, dhyanam, in that way, anusandhanam has to go on. So, Bhagavatam has to be understood in this way. Once it goes in, it takes over everything inside. You have no time to think about anything else. The thoughts of Srimad Bhagavatam is such, Leela kada shravana kirtana dhyana mananam. Everything has to continuously go on. Which means it has to be done continuously. At that time, one will develop that bhakti properly. And mind will get dissolved in Krishna. And and when the mind gets stuck in Krishna and does not go into sense objects anymore, that will give you that shanti. And that is called moksham, or liberated state, and that is therefore he says, Munaya sadhu prashtoham bhavadvir logamangalam yalkrida krishna samprasno yena alma suprasidadi. He says, therefore your question is very valid, says Sudha Goswami, right? So till we have this ahaituki apratihata bhakti in Krishna, till then, only then we will get that peace inside. And for that you have to hear about Krishna, sing about Krishna, and anusandhanam. So then after that, in this chapter, he very summary form, spoke about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's incarnations. All incarnations are Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes is not only when Krishna came here and performed pastimes in Vrindavanam, Mathura and Dwaraka. That's not only Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes means all incarnations also is Krishna's pastimes. Whole creation is Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes is a big topic. It's not only that when Krishna came to Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwaraka and performed Leela there. Krishna's pastimes include everything. Malsyam, Kurmam, Varaham, Narsimham, Vamanam, all that incarnations are Krishna's pastimes. The whole creation is Krishna's pastimes in that way. And then it says here that Krishna appeared as Devaki in Vasudeva's son. And that is Krishna Katha. But that is not the only Krishna Katha. All incarnations are also, and then finally Vedavyas mentions there, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And that what that means is, Krishna is the avatari. Avatari means that all incarnations have come from him. They are avatarams. All incarnations have come from Krishna. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. That is again established in that. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, what he said. Right. So, through these different incarnations, Krishna has appeared in this world and performed several pastimes for the benefit of the world, so that people could understand Krishna's different pastimes and hear about them and relish them. And therefore, Krishna is the avatari. Krishna is the avatari. Now, something important. We have three bodies, isn't it? We have three bodies. The gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. Three types of bodies we have got. One second. We are bound in this world through these three bodies. Gross body, subtle body and the causal body. We'll explain what that is. So, because these three bodies are in us, inside this package, we are not free. We are bound by that, right? Stulam, Sushmam, Karanam. So, gross body is made by material elements. Earth, water, air, ether, fire, the five material elements. These five material elements has got its subtle form. Tanmatra, they're called. The subtle form of the five material elements. And that is what we call Shabdam, Sparsham, Rupam, Rasam, Gandham. They are all the subtle form of these material elements. It is from these subtle elements our subtle body is made. Subtle body is made with the subtle elements of the material element. Subtle form of the material elements. Yeah. Gross body is made with the gross form of the material elements. Subtle body is made with the subtle form of the material elements. Right. Then, it is in this subtle body all our vasanas are. Vasanas are inside the subtle body. So, jiva is in the subtle body. Jiva is in the subtle body. Vasanas are also in the subtle body, right? And it is this subtle body we are depending on for our transfer from this body to the next body. Gross body we live here. But subtle body we don't leave, we carry with us. And it is this subtle body that travels with us to the next body, and to the next body, and to the next body. He never leaves us till we get completely liberated. Completely. So, till liberation happens, subtle body is with us. Right? So, it is therefore, because we are so closely connected with subtle body is our vehicle to the next gross body, right? So, therefore, the subtle body which has got our individual identity as jiva and also vasana, both are inside this subtle body. Vasana is there, that means all our impressions, what we have acquired through karma, that's called vasana. Vasana mayo jiva, it says. So, jiva and vasana is always together. Jiva is the ahangaram inside. Manasa, buddhi, ahangaram, chittam. Ahangaram is our jivatvam. Jiva is that ahangaram. And vasana is all in the chittam. Chittam is all vasana. So, this whole subtle body as a package goes with us into the next body. Into the next body. So, then we have got one more body. What is that? That, what is that keep us connected with this gross body? The connection with the gross body and the subtle body. And that is called Karana Shariram. So, Karana Shariram is that avidya inside us that I am this gross body. In our it's a very interesting thing it is, if you think about it. Karana Shariram is the one that is that ignorance in us, avidya, which makes us think that we are this body. That was pumped into us through Karana Shariram by Maya. And that has come from Maya. Sushma Shariram carries all the vasanas and karma vasana and the ahangaram, everything. Karana Shariram injected into us that avidya, that I am this body, by Maya. These things I won't repeat again, because this will come in all the time throughout in the Bhagavadam. Later on you will find this understanding, basic understanding of us. Stulam Sushmam Karanam. Stulab Shariram what it is, Sushma Shariram what it is, Karana Shariram what it is. Karana Shariram is because it is too subtle. The yogis understand this, jnanis understand this. That's why they are able to tell us very clearly what we are. University education won't help us in all these things. We have to change our thought process completely. We have to give up all the misunderstanding what we have understood about this body. Right? Once you come to the spiritual, that's what I'm saying. Spiritual culture means understanding ourselves through a spiritual understanding. Proper spiritual understanding of who we are. The other understanding, material understanding is, I am this body, I belong to this country, I belong to this place, this is my family. This is all material understanding, for which we fight and kill and all that, do that. But once you come to spiritual understanding, which is spiritual culture, this is spiritual culture. Spiritual culture means that gross body is coming from material elements. The subtle body has come from the tanmatras, or the subtle form of the material elements. And causal body, which you have got three bodies, the causal body is the product of Maya, which has injected into us that we are this body. We are this body, right? So, that is called Karana Shariram. Karana Shariram. And that will only go by self-realization. Only when self-realization happens, Karana Shariram will die. Otherwise it won't die. Self-realization will destroy Karana Shariram. Yeah? It is in the third chapter. You can look at that. 1-3-33. Yatreme asadasadrube pradishidde sasamvidaha avidyayatmani krade idhidal brahma darshanam. That verse. That's what it is saying. That yatreme sadasadrube pradishidhe swasamvida avidyay almani krde ididal brahma darshanam. You have to know that Maya has created that. Maya, this is what Maya has done, locked us up in that Karana Shariram of avidya, ignorance. That is why thousands of times you tell someone you are not this body, he is not able to accept it. Why? Because you are not able to break through Maya. Maya is not allowing you to change that thinking from inside. Maya has forced this into us that we are this body. Yeah? And even if we keep repeating, you are not the body, you are not the body, you are not accepting it. And that is Maya. Avidyaya, this says here, avidyaya almani krite, iti dal brahma darshanam. That avidya that has been created by Maya, once that is destroyed, brahma darshanam, then you realize who you are. Self-realization happens at that time. So, this karana shariram or causal body can only go through self-realization. Otherwise, causal body won't die. All the three bodies are responsible for our bondage. Gross body, subtle body, causal body. Gross body will go when you die. That's not a big problem. But the only thing is another one will come. That's wrong. But the subtle body will go with you till you get out of the cycle of birth and death. And causal body will only go when Maya withdraws from us. When Maya gives the clearance. Otherwise it won't happen. So, this sthulam or gross subtle body, this gross and subtle body, we started identifying with them because of avidya. So basically you can see, gross body is there, subtle body is there. And we are identifying with both of them. With the gross body as well as the subtle body. And the reason for that is avidya, which is causal body. So causal body or the karana shariram is the cause for our identification with the gross and the subtle body. All these things we must plant inside very strongly, deep inside, so that we don't forget it again. Otherwise, if our mind goes back into our university mode, we'll start asking university questions. And that shouldn't happen, because spiritual life is a science itself on its own. The knowledge process is very much in a different world. It's altogether understanding that we are not this gross body and the subtle body and the causal body, right? So, when that ignorance goes away through self-realization, which happens through very deep devotion, bhakti inside, and with that, it happens that a person who is performing sadhana, when through self-realization he gets it, what? That he is consciousness, he is not the body. When that happens, the karana shariram or causal body will go. So, karana shariram or causal body, which is nothing but the avidya inside, which is imposed on us by Maya, you have to break through that by self-realization. That's what it does. Self-realization actually destroys that avidya inside us. Jnana margam, bhakti margam is only for that purpose, to get rid of that avidya from inside. When avidya gets completely burned inside, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, Jnana agni sarvakarmanam basmasat kurite Arjuna. He says it burns everything, that avidya gets burned. When that avidya goes, this is all required for, first for the buddhi to accept. When buddhi is clear with all these things, only then you can go further after that. So, this karana shariram has to die, because karana shariram is the first one which has to die. Out of the three bodies, it is the karana shariram that has to die first in us. So, getting rid of these three bodies is not easy. Unless we get rid of self through self-realization, through the sadhana process, bhakti sadhana or jnana sadhana, it doesn't matter. Through either sadhana, first you destroy this karana shariram inside, avidya shariram it is called. And once that is destroyed, and when you become realized the self, you have realized the self, that karana shariram has gone, because avidya has gone, and with that, once karana shariram goes away, the next thing what will happen is gross body and the subtle body will also go. After that, first one that will get destroyed is this causal body, karana shariram. The next one that will get destroyed is the grows on the subtle body. Because that connection to the gross and subtle body is through causal body. We feel gross and subtle body as our identity. That is happening to us through the causal body. So if causal body is completely destroyed, the connection with the gross and subtle body is broken. The connection is broken, right? And you can see here, the connection with the subtle body is through vasanas. Connection to the subtle body is through vasanas, right? And as soon as subtle causal body is burned, the vasanas that is in the because when causal body is destroyed, when self-realization happens, that means the knowledge has come in. Ajnanam has gone, jnanam has come. Avidya has gone, vidya has come. And in that vasana, in that jnanam or vidya, all the karma vasanas get burned. Which that's what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. Jnana agni sarva karmanam bhasma sad kurate Arjuna, he says. What does he mean by that? What Krishna is saying is, jnana, the fire of knowledge is such, which has destroyed the causal body, right? Which has destroyed the causal body. That is a self-realization. That has destroyed the causal body. And that knowledge which is of like a fire burning, that will get into the subtle body and burn all the vasanas inside. That's what that verse means. Jnana agni sarva karmanam bhasmasad. Sarva karmanam means all the karma vasana. In the subtle body, it will be burned. Bhasmasad kurite Arjuna, it says. So you see how that works? Gross body, subtle body, causal body. Causal body is avidya. Through self-realization, you come out of that. But that knowledge burns further. It gets into subtle body, burns all the vasanas as well. With that, karma vasanas have gone. And when we when we have realized it, first it comes into subtle body and burns all the vasanas. And then what else it does? It makes us aware that he has realized that he is not this body anymore. That realization has happened. And when he realizes that, his identification with the gross body goes away. Along with that, he loses his personality as well. This personality is an interesting thing, isn't it? That we all have that personality, which is only present in the wakened and the dream state. Personality is only present in the wakened and the dream state. I belong to this place, I belong to this country, or I'm living in this particular... We have so many personality-based identity. Personality-based identity. I live in a particular place, I'm father of somebody, I'm mother of somebody, or... All kinds of, I'm working in this particular place, I'm a politician, I'm a businessman, whatever it may be. These are all identities based on personality, isn't it? Personality-based identities. Those personality-based identities also goes away. And they are all based on the gross body. All the personality-based identities are based on the gross body. And that when this avidya goes away, and the subtle body and the causal body has moved away, have lost. This personality also goes along with that. And finally, the gross body drops and that's also gone. So in this way, all the three bodies gets destroyed. All the three bodies gets destroyed. And that is what it is mentioned here, that when he realizes this, that he has no connection anymore with the gross body. In this way, a person who is practicing spiritual life, sataka, one who is performing sadhana, through bhakti, first bhakti, and with that he gets the knowledge, jnanam, and finally he gets liberation from these three bodies. And that is spoken in this, in the third chapter. Third chapter is all about that. Only thing is, in one verse he spoke it. Yatrame sadasadrube pratishiddhesu samvida. Avidya almani krite. It is al brahma darshanam. That is what that is about it. Yadyesho varada devi maya. You have to read all the, these explanations won't change. It will be the same in Prabhupada's commentary also, so they are the same. Yadyesho parada devi maya vaisharadi mati. That's verse 34. Sambannam evedi vidur mahinyasve mahiyate. Evam janmani karmani agatura janasya varnayandisma kavayo veda guhyani hrilpade. So, with those verses, that Sudha Goswami is saying here, that the answer to the questions presenting to about Krishna, right? And then in third chapter it was all spoken, and so this Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion of Krishna's different pastimes, right? In a very elaborated way, and Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled that, yeah. And then you can see on the verse 42. Sarva Vedehasanam Saram Saram Samudradam Samtu Samshravaya Masa Maharajam Parikshidam. Right. He's saying Sarva Vedehasanam Saram Saram Samudradam. That all Vedam Idihasam, its essence, they have churned it and got the essence out of it, right? And that means, how do you get the essence? By reflecting on it, thinking about it, in such a deeper level. All Vedam, Itihasam, Puranam, everything, they have studied and thought through it in a, such a deeper level, and got the essence of that, and that is how, after getting that essence, he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Bhagavatam for the benefit of everyone, for those who are seeking for liberation, right? And in order to open up for them, and after that, he gave the Srimad Bhagavatam to his dearmost son, Shuka Brahmarshi, who is also a self-realized personality. And Sri Shuka Brahmarshi went to Ganga River, and the river bank, Parikshit Maharaj, who was going, performed Prayobavesham, was going to give up his body by fasting and simply sitting in one place and giving up the body. And to him, he gave this Bhagavatam to Parikshit, he said. And when Parikshit was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, by Krishna's and my spiritual master's mercy, says Sudha Goswami, he says, I happened to be there. I got the opportunity to be there with them, to hear this. And due to hear his mercy, Shuka Brahmarshi's mercy, I have understood something from Bhagavatam, certain things from Bhagavatam. He doesn't say I have understood the whole Bhagavatam. He says some things I have understood from the Bhagavatam. And that Bhagavatam, what I have got from Shuka Brahmarshi, what I have got, as much as possible within my capacity, I will teach you that. I will recite that for you. See how Sudha Goswami is? He's saying, I'm not saying that everything I have understood, what Shuka Brahmarshi told Parikshit. He's not saying that. He's saying, certain things I have understood, what he said. And what I have understood, to my capacity, I will try to deliver it to you. Whatever I can present it in within my capacity. And that is how Sudha Goswami finished that. You see that? Soham, last words. Aham jadyagamam tatra nivishta sadanugrahal soham vashravayishyami. Last two words. Yathadhitam yathamati. He says. Yathadhitam yathamati. Whatever I have understood, he said, what I could get from that, yathamadi, to my capacity, I will give it to you. That is how, so you can understand how Sudha Goswami sees things. He knows very well that he will never be able to understand Shukha Brahmarshi completely. Everything what he has spoken. A lot of things he has understood. And Shukha Brahmarshi said he will speak Bhagavatam. That's also there behind it. He has given the accreditation to Sudha Goswami that you can speak Bhagavatam. So to the extent I have understood, I will speak, he said. And to my capacity, I will present it for you, he said. So, and he said that when Krishna left this world, where did dharmam take shelter? That was the question in the first chapter, right? And what was helping this world to continue in this way? And they have taken shelter of this sun called Bhagavatam. Instead of Krishna, Bhagavatam has become the shelter, right? So when Krishna was present here, Krishna was a source of guide, or he was able to guide others, or people looked up to Krishna for guidance. Krishna's way of doing things, the way things what Krishna has spoken, and Krishna's household life, Krishna's dealing with different people, personalities. Krishna was an example for everyone in many ways. And that Krishna completed his pastimes here, purpose of that incarnations here. And he has moved himself into Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called Vajo Vibhuti of Krishna. And it says that if you help, take the help of Bhagavatam, you can acquire bhakti and mukti. You can develop bhakti and you can get liberated as well. And then he said, why did Vedavyasa Maharshi compile Srimad Bhagavatam? That was the question, one question. Another question was, why did Sri Shukha Brahmarshi study Bhagavatam? Why did Parikshit Maharaj give up his body in that way, Prayogavesham? Sri Shukha Brahmarshi is always situated in the realized state. He's always realized, isn't it? That is, he's called Brahmanishta. It's called Brahmanishta. And then he remembers about the perfection of Sri Shukha Brahmarshi in a verse there. What that means is, in Sri Shukha Brahmarshi's mind, Veda Buddhi has completely gone. I know it's a little interesting subject. You see, when Sri Shukha Brahmarshi look at others, to this world or to us, he only sees Krishna everywhere, in everything, right? Everything is Brahma Swarupam. You see their verse? That is the fifth verse. That is important. In the fourth chapter, he is saying, Drishtvanu yandam hrishi almajam apyanagnam devyohriya paridadurna sutasya chitram tadviksha prachadi munau jagadustavasti stri pumpida natu sudasya vivikta drishtehe. Important words, right? Why is it important is that Vedavyasa Maharshi and Sri Shukha Brahmarshi is walking. Sri Shukha Brahmarshi is walking in the front, quite a bit behind. Vedavyasa Maharshi is following him. Yeah? He is following him, right? And Sri Shukha Brahmarshi is completely naked. Complete Digambaram is. No clothes on, nothing. At the same time, he's very beautiful to look at, like Krishna. He is as beautiful as Krishna, if you look at him. He's so beautiful, right? And if you look at his face, that self-realized state is manifesting in front of, in his face itself. That self-realized state of consciousness. When we say the face is the index of the mind, that our thoughts and other things will be present in our face also. Similarly, he is in a realized state. Due to that, you can see from his face itself an effulgence that is present there. Right? So, when you look at that face, it appears as though the sun of knowledge has risen, like a sun. Knowledge personified is walking in that way, right? So, and in that way, Shukha Brahmarshi is walking like this, followed by Vedavyas behind, right? So, they arrived near a tank where people were bathing. They got close to that, right? So, normally for bathing ghats and all, they will have a shelter there, so that people who are walking outside won't see the people who are bathing inside. It's like a shelter it is built. But this place didn't have any shelter. And women were bathing there. They saw Shukha Brahmarshi walking completely naked. They didn't take notice of it. They didn't even think about him anything. And they didn't feel shy. And they continued with bathing. As usual, they were bathing. There was nobody else there. They continued bathing. And Shukha Brahmarshi also did not take notice of them. He continued walking, right? And Vedavyasa Maharshi saw that from behind. Vedavyasa Maharshi saw that. And then he noticed that Shukha Brahmarshi didn't take notice of them. They didn't take notice of Shukha Brahmarshi either. They continued bathing. And Shukha Brahmarshi walked away. Then Vedavyasa Maharshi came followed by Shukha Brahmarshi. They felt shy. And they took clothes and covered themselves. And Vedavyasa Maharshi at that time asked them, that my son who is so beautiful and young, he walked this way. And you haven't had any change of your thoughts. It didn't affect you at all. You continued bathing as usual, as though nothing has happened. Even though he was young and he was very good looking and he was walking completely naked along there, it didn't create any impact on you. But how come that me, an old person, who has supposed to have gone all beyond all these things, feelings like that, that seeing me, you have taken the clothes and covered yourself. I am not able to understand this, he said. Shukha Brahmarshi is young, 16, 17 year old, young man, beautiful, good looking, no clothes on, and he is walking. And you people had no effect on that. You were not affected by that. And Vedavyas has noticed that. And when Vedavyas came there, they have taken cloaks and covered themselves, feeling shy, seeing Vedavyas, who is an older person. For you don't have to be concerned about him so much at this age. And Vedavyas could not understand this. So he is asking this question to them. Why did you do that? This makes no sense to me, he said. And that is what the last verse is. Stri pumbhida nadusudasya vivikta drishtehe. That one line is the answer for that. Stri pumbhida nadusudasya vivikta drishtehe. What he is saying here is that in you, they say, you still not free from man-woman difference. We all have that, isn't it? We all know, men know we are men, and women know they are women. And there is a difference in our thoughts, our actions, our dealings with the world, when we are conscious of that, is it not? We know how we dare to deal with women, how to talk to men. There is a difference all the time inside us, which will not leave us very easily. And this is the last thing in self-realization, to leave. This Tri Pumbhida Nadusudasya Vivikta Drishte. That is that line talking about. He's saying here that you still have that, and that is called Beda Buddhi. Beda Buddhi means, this is one of the Beda Buddhi. There are many types of Beda Buddhi inside us. All other Beda Buddhi will leave us. But this one Beda Buddhi won't leave us till the last minute. till we get realized the truth. The last thing, last Veda Buddhi that will leave us is this Sri Purusha difference, man-woman difference. Sri Pumbhida Nadusudasya Vivikta Drishtehe. So, in your son's case, that Veda Buddhi has gone completely. The women are saying this to Vedavyas, right? And he is a person inside, outside, everywhere, whole creation, he only sees consciousness. Everywhere, right? Nothing else. And for him, everything is consciousness. Everything is consciousness. And he is seeing consciousness everywhere and completely equally vision has happened to him. Remember Krishna says about Samadarshanam. Samadarshanam means this. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam also later, Samadarshanam is a, Samadarshanam means you don't even see this difference man, woman even. Which is the last thing to get out from the from self-realization. So, and in that state only, no bad thoughts or evil thoughts will come inside us. Once that leaves us, the last one to leave us, right? So, and that is the Samabhavana. And that was Sri Shuka Brahmarishi's situation. And it is very difficult to get out of this. This three Purusha Bheda. Yeah? It's not easy. Man is will always feel that he is a man, and woman will always feel they are women. And that thing, it is not easy to become free from that. And that Veda Buddhi has left, Shuka Brahmarishi has left him, and that means he has become perfect in his Brahmanishtha. And only a person who has become completely perfect in Brahmanishtha will become free from this Sri Purusha Buddhi. Sri Purusha Buddhi, right? And and such a person who has come to that state, he doesn't have to study Srimad Bhagavatam. He doesn't have to, right? Because ultimately after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it is this state that we want to get to. That Sri Pumpida Nadusudasya Vivekta Drishte. To come to that state, to come out of this, that I am man, I am woman, and this identity, once you are completely freed from that, you don't need to study Bhagavatam anymore after that, right? Therefore, for such a person, doesn't need Bhagavatam anymore, right? So, to get to that stage, and for him, he doesn't have to get anything from Bhagavatam after that, and because he has reached that stage, he has reached that stage. Such a person, why has he studied Srimad Bhagavatam? That is the question then. Such a person doesn't have to study Bhagavatam, one who has reached that state, because it is for that purpose you study Bhagavatam, to come to the state of that Veda Buddhi to go completely. Samadarshanam. Satyanja Samadarshanam, Krishna says. Isn't it? So Samadarshanam, you have already got it. You have become even free from this last shackle of Maya called man, woman. Even if you have come out of that, then why do you have to study Bhagavatam? That comes later. We'll continue after a few minutes. Chedo darpanam arjanam baumaha davagni narvabanam shreyakkaidava chandriya vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandambudhi vardhanam pradivada purnamrda swadhanam sarvagna subanam varam vijayate shri krishna sangirtanam namna magari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrarpida nimida smaranena kala eda drishitava kripa bhagavan mamabhi durdaiva midrashamiha janinanuragha trinarabhi shunijena tarorabhi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari nadhanam najanam nasundarim kavidam vajagadishakamaye mama janmani janmani ishwari bhavadad bhaktirahai dugitvai ai nandatanuja kingaram padidamam shame bhavambudo kripaya tava pada pangaja sthita dhuli sadrisham vichindaya nayanam galada sudharaya vadanam gadgadaruddhaya gira pulagair nijidam gada vabu tava nama grahane bhavishyadi yuga idam nimeshena chakshusha pravisha idam ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗല് സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണമേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാതുലം വടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നയേവ നാഥരാ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So the Shuka Brahmarshi, who had no purificatory ceremonies required because already liberated, such a person, why did he study Bhagavatam? This was the question raised, right? And why did he do that? Then why Parishad Maharaj gave up his body in that way, Prayopavesham, to decide to sit in one place and leave this world? And which means that upavasam means remaining like that and fasting, not eating or drinking anything, and leaving the body, right? And that is what is called prayopavesham. Prayopavesham means no demands for the body is met, eating, sleeping or anything, nothing for the body, and decide to leave the body like that. Imagine the strength of that person inside. Then he says, these questions, what you say, that why did Vedavyasa Maharshi compile Bhagavatam? Why did he write Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So that question is answered, that Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Bhagavatam, right? First of all, he divided the Vedam into four. Then he wrote all the 17 Puranams. Bhagavatam is the 18th one. 17 Puranams. Then he wrote Mahabharatam. Then he wrote Brahma Sutram. And he wasn't happy with all that still. And then he felt that he didn't feel a satisfaction inside after that. He didn't feel satisfied after writing all this, right? The purpose Vedavyasa had come here, that he wanted to tell the whole world there is a way of escaping from here. There's a way of escaping from here. And that is the process of liberation, moksha margam. In order to give that instructions to this world, that was the purpose of his coming here, avatara kritya. He is also an incarnation, isn't it? Literary incarnation of Krishna, as he said. So, and that has not been completed yet. But from the books what he has compiled, what he has written so far, some people have got the help. Some people have got the help. For their, only a part of the people, not everybody, has got the benefit of taking advantage of his literature, what he has compiled. That's all. But he is still thinking, is there some process which everyone else can be benefited? And he realized that bhakti is the solution for that. Bhakti is the solution for that. And in order to explain the bhakti process, he decided that he felt that there is a need to write more. Just to explain the bhakti process, right? And only then he felt that his mission is complete. He thought about for example, Brahma Sutram and even Mahabharatam and the dividing the Vedas and all the other Puranams and all did not develop bhakti in the heart of the people. People were not able to develop bhakti through all the other literature. So Vedavyas thought that there has to be a process which will help everyone. Some people got the benefit who were able to take the Jnana Margam, Yoga Margam. They were all benefited by the Brahma Sutram and Mahabharatam, other Puranam and everything. But it was not suitable for everybody. Because Vedavyas knew very well that the capacity of the people to practice spiritual life and to realize the truth has diminished with the arrival of Kali. People have become very weak spiritually, very, very weak. And that's why you will see in the beginning of Bhagavatam, a lot of things spoken about Kali Yugam people, people in the Kali Yugam, how they are like, isn't it? Mandasya, Manda Prajnasya, Vayo Manda Ayushaschavai, Manda Sumandamatayo, Manda Bhagya, everything Mandam, 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 Mandam. Nothing is urgent in Kali Yugam. People are not in a urgency to realize the truth. If you say to people, oh, you have to chant Hare Krishna, we'll do it when we get old, after retirement, they will say. So, Kali Yugam is like that. People have no serious interest in spiritual life and they feel that the necessities of meeting the bodily needs is more important than anything else. Self-realization is the last priority for them. So, knowing all these things, that's why he said those verses, Nidraya Hriyade Naktam, Divaja Vyartha Karmabhi. Throughout the day, they'll be doing all nonsense, useless things. Vyartha Karmabhi. And night time they are busy with the sleeping. They are very concerned about their sleep. And they are very busy during the day with the work. So what time do they have for spiritual life? And Vedavyasa is saying all these things to us again and again and again in the Bhagavatam. That this is how you are. So he realized that Jnanamargam won't suit them. They just cannot do it because they just don't have the spiritual strength in them. Yogamargam also is difficult. Karma Margam is also not possible. Then finally he came to conclusion, Bhakti may be the most process that might suit them at this stage, right? So that is how he decided to compile Srimal Bhagavatam and he said that the only process is Bhakti for them. And for that purpose I haven't compiled any literature yet. Everything else what I have, for example, Mahabharatam, 125,000 verses is all about Dharma. Talk. If you want to understand anything about Dharmam, Mahabharatam will explain it better. Brahma Sutram is all about Jnanam. It's all about Jnanam. And Vedam, he has decided to make us understand the position of the Upanishads in the Vedam. He divided them into four. So he decided that he has to compile a Puranam referring to Krishna. Krishna's activities, Krishna's pastimes, and to develop bhakti. And in that process, while he was thinking about it and living in his ashram in Badrinath, at that time, Shamya Prasam, that's the name of the place. And while he was sitting there, Narada Maharshi arrived on the scene. And Narada Maharshi, he received him very well. And he saw this he looking very gloomy. Vedavyas looking very gloomy and asked him that why are you so upset? That I cannot understand why you are having so much problem. You are a person who knows what the truth is and you know what is to be known. And you also know this four purushartham, which means dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham. You are known to all these things and the benefit of all that. And you have also understood and practiced it, those things, and you are also capable of analyzing the Vedam properly. Sanadana Dharmam is based, Sanadana Brahma Tattvam, he says, and that Shastram, you have analyzed it very well, and through sadhana process, you have realized it yourself. Still you are unhappy. Why? He said to Vedavyas, right? And you look unhappy. And he said that to show to the rest of the world the purpose of the Vedam and the knowledge of the Vedam. And Mahabharatam, through that you have tried. You have tried. But you are not still happy with that. And why did this happen? Upanishad says, Tarati Shokam Atmavit. Atmavit means one who has realized the soul inside, he transcends distress in life. Tarati shokam atmavit. Tarati shokam atmavit. Atmajnani means self-realized person who has realized the soul, he goes beyond any distress in this world. No distress can affect him anymore. So you have realized that because the nature of the truth is Satya Chitta Anandam. Anandam it is, bliss, isn't it? That Satchidanandam is present inside us. And once you have realized that, as your very self is that identification with Satchidanandam. And such a person, he is always in the platform of the soul, not in the bodily identity anymore. And he cannot have a distress like that. Then why did this happen? That is what Narada Maharshi is asking Vedavyas, right? So, now this question will come. Why Vedavyas was upset, right? Then you have to look into a little bit more deeper into this subject. We read Bhagavatam and we are just happy that, oh, Vedavyas was disturbed and Narada Maharshi came and told him, you write Bhagavatam, everything will be okay. That's not how it happens. Vedavyas himself is a self-realized soul. And he has come to this world and he is feeling unhappy. He knows more than anybody that this body is false. This world is false. This gross body, subtle body, everything is false. He knows more than anyone else. And after knowing all that and he's still unhappy, means there must be some serious reason behind it, is it not? So that is why that question has come up, right? What we have to understand is this. Vedavyasa Maharshi is not an ordinary person, right? He's not an ordinary jiva. He's not an ordinary jiva, right? He is Krishna's another form who had come here. And that is why it is an avataram, it is. It's an avataram, literary incarnation we say. And it has come with a certain mission. He had a mission while coming here. And that mission has to be executed at any cost, right? And this is the problem with all incarnations. The decision is made somewhere in which form Krishna is going to come. On what basis it's made, we don't know. And what form he is going to take, we don't know. Nobody knows. Shastram also won't tell you about incarnations. Incarnations is a great mystery. Which incarnation Krishna comes at different times. It's a great mystery. We will never know that. So, Vedavyasa has come here, and nobody knew that Vedavyasa had come with a mission like that. But he had come for a particular reason only, that he wanted to help these people in Kali Yugam, who are completely misguided, misled, quarreling, arguing, fighting, killing, all sorts of things. Is the peculiar nature of this Kali Yugam. Everyone sees everybody as enemy. There is no truthfulness. You remember the four pillars of sinful life, like that's all very prominent in the age of Kali, right? So he didn't come here to perform sadhana and get liberated like all of us. Vedavyas didn't come to this world to perform sadhana like us. He's not an ordinary jiva. This is the first thing to remember. He's not an ordinary jiva who had come. He's an incarnation, he is. That means he didn't come here like we are here. Why? Because we have to perform sadhana. We want to escape from this cycle of birth and death. Vedavyas doesn't have that problem. Vedavyas has come, Krishna has come in another form to educate the world on spiritual life for that purpose, right? So when, Vedavyas is concerned or Vedavyas is distressed is not due to anything else about self-realization of himself. He was more concerned that how do I fulfill the purpose of my coming here? Purpose was to help the world to develop spiritually. To develop spiritual knowledge. And he was more concerned about that rather than about his own self-realization. That didn't bother for him because he's an incarnation himself, right? So, in order to complete his purpose of the visit, Avatara Kritya, it's called. Avatara Kritya means that the purpose for which that incarnation has happened, that has to be fulfilled and that hasn't happened yet. And that is what was worrying him. That is what was worrying him, right? So, these personalities who come here, Krishna's different forms, when they come, And as far as fulfilling their plans, in completing that, they will also have problems. Who? These incarnations. The incarnation, Krishna's incarnations, when they come here, when they have to fulfill their mission, they will have problems while dealing in this world, within this world, right? So, and they will also sometimes require instructions. Even though they have come as incarnations of Krishna, when they are here in this world, they will also need some help sometimes. Sometimes they will need help, right? So, this Vedavyasa Maharshi has caught into that situation, right? So, Vedavyasa Maharshi is thinking, what do I have to do that by which that I can complete my mission? He was thinking and he was worrying about that. And it was at that time that Sri Narada Maharshi arrived there on the scene to give the instructions to him. And Narada Maharshi told him, if you look into the 5th chapter, what he said, that Sri Narada Uvacha, 8th verse, Bhavata anudida prayam yesho bhagavato omalam yenai vasona tushyeda manyeta darshanam khilam yadha dharmadayascharta munivaryanu kirtida natadha vasudevasya mahima anuvarnidaha. So, incarnation means, incarnation is not always complete. Incarnation is also guided from the top. Sachidananda Brahman, from his all these incarnations are coming, they are also guided from the top when they have to complete their missions, right? So, Sri Narada Maharshi saw the situation and understood that what is bothering him, who? Vedavyas. After he saw that, he told him, that you have not discussed Krishna's pastimes enough, and Sri Krishna Leela, and that too in detail. And Mahabharatam, a lot of it is spoken about Krishna, isn't it? And in other Puranams also, like Vishnu Puranam, and many other, Brahmanda Puranam, Brahma Vaivartam, all other Puranams also talks about Krishna. But none of them has actually spoken about, in detail, about Krishna's pastimes here, properly, right? And that is the mistake. That is why you are feeling this vacuum inside. You feel some kind of incompleteness, that my purpose has not served, right? So, therefore, Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, in my opinion, what he is saying is that all your activities has not completely fulfilled the mission because it has not totally satisfied Krishna. Krishna is not completely satisfied. Therefore, it has not fulfilled the purpose, right? So, the purpose of everything is ultimately to please Krishna. Krishna should be pleased. And develop bhakti in the heart towards Krishna, and the mind has to completely get fixed up in Krishna. Mind has to get completely connected to Krishna inside. And anything that is not helping, that is not of a much of a help, he said. Who said this? Narada Maharshi to Vedavyas, right? And he said that knowledge and literary abilities, austerities, everything is a man. He says that it is not worthwhile. Yadha dharmadeshartha munivaryanu kirtida na tatha vasudevasya mahima anuvarnida. He says, in Mahabharatam you have written Mahabharatam, and in there dharmam, artham, kamam, all these things you have spoken, but you did not glorify the glories of Krishna. You didn't mention that. Mahabharatam's main problem is that. Mahabharatam, no doubt, it's all about dharmam, isn't it? Dharmam is what is spoken in the Mahabharatam. Then he's saying there that in Mahabharatam you have everything spoken, but Vasudeva Mahima, he says, na tatha Vasudevasya Mahima anuvarnidaha, that you didn't glorify enough, because dharmam, artham, kamam, those things you have spoken, But Vasudeva Mahima, you didn't speak, and that you didn't do in Mahabharatam. 125,000 verses you wrote in Mahabharatam. But in that Mahabharatam, people who take that part of the Mahabharatam, which is helpful for Adhyatma, spiritual life, is not much in Mahabharata. That is another problem. In Mahabharata, if you study well, what do you find in Mahabharata that will help you in your spiritual path is not much in there. A lot of it is material life, what is discussed in that. Mahabharata war, what happened to the Pandavas before that, the Kaurava families, how this problem developed between them. Like this, it's more concerned about the historical side of the So Mahabharata is not really concerned very much about the spiritual development of a person. It's not much helpful. Basically, they say that there's only two topics in the Mahabharata which is very helpful for spiritual life. One is Bhagavad Gita, other one is Sanal Sujadiya. These two texts in the Mahabharata, which is completely focused on spiritual life. Not all the other things. Other things are a lot of it is what happened to the Pandavas in the forest. And then a lot of things is related to Varnashrama Dharma. Hundreds of chapters where Bhishma instructing Yudhishthira about Varnashrama Dharma. Now, for a person who is advancing in spiritual life, at some point Varnashrama Dharma also becomes meaningless. It's not of much help. Individually, when you are practicing spiritual life for self-realization, in his path process, this Varnashrama Dharma only up to a certain level it can help in the early days. But for an advanced person, Varnashrama Dharma is not anymore valid or it's not of much help to him. So that's why they say only Bhagavad Gita and Sanal Sujadiya. These are two texts. Bhagavad Gita comes in there then in the Shandi Parva. That is why this topic, Sanal Sujadiyam is Sanal Sujada Maharshi teaching Dhritarashtra. Teaching Dhritarashtra, right? And that is Upadesham to Dhritarashtra by Sanal Sujada Maharshi. Then this topic of Bhagavad Gita is in the Shandi Parvam, Bhishma and Yudhishthira, that conversation. If you remove all that, rest of the topic in the Mahabharata is all material life. It's all about material life. Grahmi Vishayam, right? So, that is why you will see afterwards Bhagavatam also it comes later. Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying that it's very famous statement from Vedavyasa. After writing Mahabharata and after seeing the situation of the people, he put his hands like this together and said to the world that why people are like this, why they don't understand the importance of dharma, he said. About people, he's saying, why they don't understand this, what I'm saying. Urdhva Bahu, right? So, and you can see from that, he was shouting at the highest pitch. Who? Vedavyasa. In those days there was no mic. So he has to shout to the world that what is going on in this world, he said. People are not interested in dharma. They are simply interested in sense gratification. Right? So, the way he spoke was, he wanted the rest of the world to know how frustrated he was with the world, with the peer, right? So, and he says, nobody is giving attention to what I am saying. And he said that, mentioned that, you know, he said, people, they have only two things in their mind. What was that? One, they want to get money, and second, they want to satisfy their senses. And that is what is called artham and kamam. So except artham and kamam, you don't want anything else. Dharmam and moksham, they are not too interested. They are saying, why do you need that, right? So Vedavyasa is saying that this artham and kamam, if you want it, you should get it through dharmam. If you don't get it through dharmam, it won't stay, it will go. That is the principle behind it. Dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham. Out of that, people want only artham, kamam, which is all the time it is like that. Always, it's like that. Nobody has to teach us those things, arthagamam. Arthagamam is inside us. It will tell us from inside. Our vasana will create that automatically. We will have the desire to acquire wealth and we'll have the desire to enjoy life. These two things nobody need to teach us, arthagamam, right? So he's saying here, this artham and kamam, if you don't acquire it through dharmam, that it will not last, it will not stay. And you can see that in the world. Wherever wealth is acquired through, in the improper way, not through dharmam, it will not stay, it will go. And he says, dharmam, why don't you take shelter of dharmam, right? So, ordinary people who want artham and kamam, and artham and kamam, according to Vedavyas, it should be acquired through dharmam, right? And only when you acquire that way, that you will be able to experience that happiness from that. Which means that if you acquire wealth in the wrong means, through crooked means, crooked path, then if you start in that direction, you may acquire some wealth and everything, but temporarily you may be able to use it, but there will be reaction. It will come back and bite you. He's saying, you see, these two things, karmam and maya, if you don't give any attention to it, if you ignore that and operate in this world, you will see any karmam what you have done, it will come back and bite you one day. And maya, if you ignore completely, she will put us through a lot of difficulties. These are things which we will never understand. And Vedavyasa is saying this again and again, that the acquiring wealth through adharma means that it will come back to you again. And he is warning that in the Mahabharata. Throughout Mahabharata, this is the message. Follow dharmam, follow dharmam. Keep on saying this. Follow dharmam, right? So, and because dharmam is Krishna's one energy, that is Ishvara Shakti, yeah? So, you must have heard this famous statement, dharmo rakshati rakshita. Dharmam protects those who protect dharmam. If you maintain dharmam, that dharmam will protect you. It won't put you into trouble, right? So, so if you don't ignore dharmam completely and deal in this world, that at any cost I have to make money, I don't care how I make money, I have to make money, and I have to enjoy life. If this principle becomes stronger in this world, you can see how it comes back later in some other form, right? So they say this dharmam is a sword which is sharpened on both sides. A sword, not only one edge, both sides. Double-edged sword it is, right? And if you then temporarily, we have this desire to acquire wealth and to enjoy life, right? And that opportunity we may have, right? But if you go in the wrong direction to acquire wealth and enjoy life, sometimes temporarily you may succeed. Temporarily you may succeed. And you may be able to enjoy life in that way for some time. you may be able to do that. But when your good time is over, when that pious results, whatever has done, when that is over, because you see, in our life, we do pious things and sinful things both. And both reaction comes at different times. That is why sometimes you find some people who have done a lot of bad things and they are still enjoying in life. And people start asking, how come they are enjoying life? What that means is some other time they have done something good and that results have fructified now, and that's what they are actually enjoying. Their sinful activities, their results are yet to come, which will come later. It won't leave us, anybody. Because you see in the Ajamla story also we saw that karmam is like that. Karmam is continuously getting registered all the time what we are doing. It will never leave us. And you can't escape from that freely. So, and the problems when they start coming back later on, that time Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying here that an important thing he has spoken here, that in a very important principle he is saying here, that dharmam and is basically essential in life to acquire wealth, and through dharmam enjoy this life. Only through dharma. You will see Vedavyasa is saying this, right? What did Krishna say? Bhagavad Gita. Dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamam. Asmi bharadarshabha, he says to Arjuna. That kamam, you can fulfill your sense gratification, but it should be based on, not against the principles of dharma. Dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamam. Asmi bharadarshabha, he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Why did Krishna say that? What Vedavyasa is saying here. That kamam, kamam means sense gratification, which is not against the principles of dharmam, that's me. But which is not following the principles of dharmam is not me. That's maya it is. That's maya it is. So very often we get, we start thinking when we, what happens in this world, isn't it? Why did this happen? So many things happen here. Mainly the reason behind that is, that karmam what we have done, which is against the principles of dharmam, comes back to bite us in some form. It will bite us. And that could be on an individual level or on a collective level. It can happen. Nothing goes unregistered. Nothing you can escape from this. Everything has to be accounted for. So that is the reason behind that. So, so in this instruction, what Vedavyasa is saying here, he is warning us of the danger in life. That if you are not conscious of this, he says this danger is there, hiding behind it. If you go all the way out to acquire wealth without knowing the reactions that can come from that, tomorrow when it comes back and start biting you, don't complain about it. Nothing will be done about it. Karma will work in its own way. Krishna is saying that, isn't it? Karmano hibi bodhavyam, bodhavyam cha vikarmana, agarmanascha bodhavyam gahana karmano gadi, he's saying. Karmam gadi, nobody understand, Krishna says. Because it is so subtle and is so difficult to explain that, he said. So, dharmam is the upadhi for engaging in karmam. And therefore, bhogasugam, sense gratification, Krishna is not denying. He says you can have sense gratification, but it should be based on dharma. Otherwise, it will fail. And this principle of karmam is so important in the Sanatana Dharmam. That is what has been making people to be fearful in life to do certain things. That you know that it will come back and bite you one day. And when you are very conscious of that, why get involved in that? But very often people don't think that way. They think they can do something and get away with it. You can't get away with anything. Right? So, so dharmam, he mentions there, actually dharmam is not for arthakamam, basically. Dharmam was spoken. It's only a concession given, he said. Dharmam is actually for developing moksham. it is for moksham purpose dharmam is spoken in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita and everywhere. But because arthagamam is there in the body and in the vasana, in a limited way you are allowed to enjoy life, limited way you can satisfy your senses, provided it is followed through dharmam. Otherwise not. So dharmam is the beacon of the whole thing. Artham, kamam, moksham, everything is based on dharmam. If dharmam is not there, you cannot have any of the other three. So even the moksham, yes. So therefore what he said was that Narada Maharshi is correcting Vedavyas here. Narada Maharshi is telling Vedavyas that don't think that this dharmam is for sense gratification. Only for sense gratification, right? So therefore, Vyasa, he says here, dharmasya apavargasya narthothayoba kalpade arthasya dharmayikandasya kamo labhaya hismrada. Second chapter. You will see this verse. Dharmasya apavargasya narthothayoba kalpade. Dharmam is like this. If you perform pious activities, from that you will get some piety. Pious results will come from that, right? And when if you done a lot of pious activities, you will get a lot of wealth come to you. Naturally it will come to you, right? And with that wealth you can enjoy senses, right? So there are people like that who think in that way. I'll perform a lot of charity work or pious activities, and in that way I will acquire a lot of piety, and then naturally Krishna has to give you the credit for that, for what you have done, and he will give you some credit in the form of wealth or sense gratification, things like that, right? Srimad Bhagavatam is saying it is not 100% that way it works, right? Purpose of dharmam is moksham. It is a mokshopayam. Dharmam is, purpose is moksham. And that moksham is the purpose for which dharmam is given. The purpose, the goal is not artham. Means, dharmam is not for making money. Dharmam is actually to be used for getting liberation from this world, right? So, that means that when executing dharmam, one should not think through that, because there is one line of thinking like this. I'll follow the dharmam and do a lot of activities and I'll get some results from that, pious results, which means in due course my credit rating gets better and I get a lot of wealth in due course. There's a lot of people who think like that. Here, Vedavyas Maharshi is being corrected like that by Narada Maharshi, that purpose is not that. Purpose is saying here that if you perform karmam, especially pious karma, pious activities, if it is done by as an offering to Krishna, that will purify your heart. Chitta Shuddhi will happen and that will develop into bhakti, and through that bhakti you will develop renunciation, and through bhakti and renunciation you will realize the truth and you will realize the self, and that is the purpose of dharma. This is the correction that Vedavyasa Maharshi is mentioning here. And in that second chapter itself, you will see this verse mentioned. Dharmasya apavargasya narthortayoba kalpade narthasya dharmaikandasya kamo ilabhaya hismrita kamasya indriya preeti labho jiveda yavada jivasya tattva jijnyasa narthoyas cheha karmabhi. Those two verses, if you take it, the message is this, if you take those two verses, that dharmam is performed not to do pious activities based on dharmam so that you acquire a lot of pious activities to your credit, and in due course of time you will get the benefit of that. That is not the goal, he says. That's what he's saying there. That kamasi indriya preeti labho jiveta yavada. If you gratify your senses, what is the profit from that? He says, labho jiveda yavada. From that life, what did you get from that? Jivasya tattva jityasa. Human life is meant for self-realization. Tattva jityasa. Na artham yascheha karma bhi. Not acquiring wealth through karma. That's not the goal. So, these verses in the second chapter, where Prabhupada has also commented in detail, to make us aware that first of all, dharma is essential in life, for everything. Secondly, dharma is not for sense gratification. That's not the purpose. But some people have interpreted dharma that way. Through dharma you can have artham kamam. And that way fulfill all your desires, acquire wealth. That's also wrong, he's saying. Actually, purpose of dharma is for self-realization, for that purpose. And how does that happen? What he said was that when you practice, follow dharma, and while performing dharma, you have been engaged in karma. And that karma, if it is performed to please Krishna, if it is pleasing Krishna, that karma, what will happen is, that karma, in due course, will purify your heart. Chitta Shuddhi will happen. When Chitta Shuddhi happens, bhakti will develop. When bhakti develops, vairagyam will come. When bhakti and vairagyam comes, knowledge will come, self-realization will happen. This is that the process is. That's why those two verses are important. Dharmasya hyabhavargasya narthorthaya upakalpate narthasya karmaihi kandasya kamo labhaya hismrada kamasya nindriya priti labho jiveta yavada jivasya tatvajiknyasa narthoyascheha karmabhi. So those two important verses, Vedavyas has mentioned that and Sri Shuka Brahmashi has spoken that. And then Sudha Goswami is saying that first thing itself in the beginning of the Bhagavadam, he is saying this, right? And dharmam is for that purpose, right? So in the Shastram, loads of salkarmam, pious activities are spoken. They are not meant for acquiring piety, right? It is meant for liberation. So generally we'll say in a wide spectrum, all almiya sadhana, all spiritual sadhana is for that purpose, right? Even salkarma, pious activities also, you won't talk about it as dharmam, right? Salkarma dharmam, only even your activities as a dharmam, only when it is executed with the samarpana buddhi. Samarpana buddhi means Krishna's pleasure. Krishna should be happy. Krishna should become happy with that. So, not for my own sense gratification, for gratifying one's own senses, and then it is not called a dharmam anymore, right? When you do things for your own sense gratification, it's called kamya karmam. That's called kamya karmam, right? So this dharmam, artham, kamam, these three things were spoken in Mahabharatam, but ultimately you didn't glorify Krishna enough in that. Vasudeva Mahima did not speak, and because of that, people did not develop bhakti in the heart, he said. So, and therefore, he instructed him that in Mahabharatam, you have done that. Actually, you didn't glorify Krishna. You have spoken about Krishna somewhat in Mahabharatam, but it was not spoken from the bhakti side of Krishna. You have presented Krishna as a historic personality there in Mahabharatam, but didn't talk about Krishna as the absolute truth, right? So that people develop bhakti towards him, and people who are reading Mahabharatam, they are not developing a relationship with Krishna through bhakti. Bhakti is not developing in their heart. Narada Maharshi, point blank, very bluntly told Vedavyas this. And when Narada Maharshi said this, Vedavyas understood it. Already he was doubting this in his mind. But when Mahatmas are like that, they already know things, and they were very inward-looking personalities, Vedavyas, Narada Maharshi and all. And when Narada Maharshi came and said this, Vedavyas got the confirmation what he has to do. And that is how he begins Bhagavadam. He begins Bhagavadam. So we'll stop here now. We'll continue to next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.